Welcome to Equity Gurus, A Closer Look, where your host, Guy Bennett, talks to leaders from some of the best and brightest companies operating in the small cap space today.
The opinions expressed on this podcast are not necessarily shared by people who are wrong.
I am Guy Bennett. This is part two of my interview with Last Mile CEO Max Smith. How do you incentivize your customers to treat the scooters with care? Is careless use a problem? Is vandalism a problem?
Vandalism is a problem in cities that enable vandalism to be a problem. I'll use Austin as an example. Great city, love the city. The city has taken an approach, however, that says they're going to let anyone come in. And 20,000 scooters in a city populated with 930,000 people is irresponsible. And we've told that city that we really appreciate the support of the city. They had allowed us our initial launch. I was disappointed to see that so many scooters were launched. It didn't make economic sense for us to keep ass tied up where there's so much supply, much more than the demand for those mobility devices.
Right.
So in those cases, that's where you get hostility.
Max, if I rent an e-scooter or another mobility device from Last Mile, how does the insurance work?
Usually when you go up to the car rental counter, you give your credit card, you give your driver's license, and there's always someone trying to upsell you on insurance coverage.
Right.
And then you check the box and you waive or decline coverage. So similarly, when you're renting in the terms of service, you are assuming risk and you are not necessarily insured. If there is an accident and you're responsible, like that is your responsibility, that is your liability. We have our own insurance. We have a general liability insurance and we have rideshare insurance. So we have multiple layers of insurance, but we want to make it more transparent and more clear. So we're in discussions with companies that can also give the ability for the rider to be insured. So you're not at the rental counter, it's just a quick app experience. But how do you move towards the place where, you know, check the box, a dollar a ride, you're fully insured. I'm making up the dollar a ride, that's an example for this conversation. But I think what the industry needs to do is be very transparent to the rider to give them options. No one's going to read a 27-page user agreement that's embedded in an app. And you know, we all need to be cognizant of that, but make it very explicit during the sign-up process. You know, what is your responsibility? What is that of the rideshare company? And give people options to be more fully insured if they wish.
What does your app do?
Today, the app enables you to find a mobility product,
yep,
a bike, a scooter, what have you,
yep,
to reserve or rent that scooter,
yep,
and then end your ride. So it really, the app enables you to engage with our products and use the service. There will be a lot more functionality, mm-hmm, going forward that we're building, mm-hmm, into the app. The value that we can create is building other products, services, or experiences into the app. If you have a credit balance, you might want to use that credit balance for a purchase. We may have sponsorships with other vendors that are actually want to drive traffic to their store. So we can use carrots and sticks to incentivize people to pick on Subway or promote Subway. $5 off your Subway sandwich if you, when you park your ride here outside of the Subway store, for example.
That's
there are ways to incentivize and move people around to different stores. I had an early discussion with some of the leadership at the municipal level of Santa Barbara. And Santa Barbara recently said, they walked me up and down the street and said, we have 40 empty stores on our main street that have all sort of lost their leases because of Amazon or other online businesses that drove the retailers out of business.
Yeah.
They said, is there any way that you can help fight that? I said, of course. Like, we can drive traffic anywhere. If you want people to be in one part of your city, we can create $2 off your ride when you end here. So we can use the app, offer future promo codes for discounted rides by pricing differently. You can encourage people to leave devices in certain places and drive them other areas.
That is interesting. I hadn't thought of that you have the ability to deliver customers, basically, potential customers.
Absolutely.
I mean, if they want to go there, if they choose to go there.
Absolutely. The service today is the movement of people.
Yeah.
It's a rideshare service. It's
getting
people from point A to point B. The service tomorrow is a lot more.
Yeah.
So we think of the rideshare operations as really a network, and we're trying to expand that network by deploying more vehicles when appropriate. We expand our network when we open up a new city or university and put more vehicles out. But we also think more broadly of the platform. And the platform are these other opportunities and revenue opportunities, whether it's sponsorships or media or insurance or purchasing power or discounts with retailers who are physical retailers. That's, I think, the really exciting part of what our vision is and what else we can do. It starts with, and people will know us as a mobility company, but we're building a very powerful app and ecosystem that will enable people to do a lot more than just get from point A to point B.
You're listening to the Equity.Guru podcast.
Just a quick note to tell you, sorry to interrupt your interview, but if you want more of these, you need to go to your podcast player, whatever that podcast player is, and go and subscribe to the Equity Guru podcast. You can do that through iTunes. You can do it through Google Play. You can do it through all the places. Equity Guru podcast. Do it now.
Welcome back.
Max, do you anticipate operating in other countries, like Canada, for instance?
We would love to be in Canada because we are public on the Toronto Venture Exchange.
Yeah.
Had many conversations with cities and municipalities. Laws are just changing in Canada to enable more robust solutions. They had a few pilots in Calgary. Lime was in Calgary last year. There have been a few deployments. I had many conversations with the directors of transportation of Kelowna, who have said, like, listen, we love the Ojo scooter because it's got a seat, it's got a more powerful engine and a range that can make it up and down the hills of this, you know, lovely Canadian version of Napa. So I think Vancouver is an outstanding city with tremendous bike infrastructure and weather that's a little better than Toronto or Montreal or some of the eastern Canadian cities. So I think Canada clearly is an opportunity for us. We've been in discussions with food delivery companies in Canada who want to use our scooter and product for the food delivery business. And whenever I'm in Toronto and Vancouver, I always see the e-bikes and delivery people or pedal bikes for food delivery businesses. So we think that we have opportunities there. And we've also already begun discussions with partners in other parts of the world outside of the US who are very anxious to sort of help expand our platform and use our platform for mobility services there.
Are there scooters being built currently in China?
All of our product is currently built in China.
Tariffs could change that?
Tariffs have now gone away. And we're actually now getting reimbursed for tariffs that we had paid.
Oh,
and so one step further, so we had already identified future assembly of product in Vietnam or Cambodia.
Yep.
Our partners who we've been working with for a while have, everyone was affected by tariffs. And so we were looking at opportunities. We could have been up and running in Vietnam by now, but then the tariffs were removed and we're pleased to continue with our partners. We have great partners in China right now. So tariffs are not the current issue. We're more concerned about the impact of the coronavirus as it impacts supply chain.
Yep.
But we've got good inventory of product right now that's ready to be deployed. And we have partners who are still delivering product for us from China on time.
Can you tell me about your share structure?
We recently, in October, did our RTO where we merged into the Arcturus shell. That was our first access for being public and gaining good, important capital. This is our second capital raise. We just completed on Friday. We have about 102 million limited voting shares.
Mm-hmm.
We do have warrants that were associated with the recent capital raise where we just closed last Friday on 6 million US.
Yep.
We have about 5 million options outstanding for key employees and incentives. So on a fully diluted basis, that's about 128 million shares outstanding. You know, we've got enough capital at the moment to fund our current plans where we expect to have 16,000 vehicles deployed by the end of the year. And we will always, in this business, I seem like I'm never not raising money. And so we're always looking for other strategic capital to help continue to fuel our growth. But unless we go into an accelerated growth phase this year, we're okay to deliver on the 16,000 vehicles. If we have accelerated growth opportunities, we'll probably be back in the market for additional capital. I've also had a lot of lengthy discussions about debt partners. We're now getting to a point where we have enough experience that shows the recoupment of our vehicles, that our business model works, that our exclusive contracts are very attractive. And therefore, a lot of debt partners are interested in lending rather than issuing capital. So we'll probably, I'll be looking at all forms of capital to fuel our growth on a go-forward basis. But if it's less dilutive and we have different, attractive rates, we could also continue to fund growth.
By the way, how many vehicles do you have now?
We have about 3,000 vehicles deployed. Yeah, and that'll go to 16,000 by the end of the year.
What are your projected milestones for 2020 and 2021?
Well, the 16,000 is our big focus for this year. All of it's contracted. We have contracts with municipal partners and universities for over 19,000. And so if we were fully deployed, we would do that. We're spacing it out a little bit such that we've probably not even reached full deployment of our existing contract base this year. And then we think of next year in sort of the 27,000 vehicle range, which is, you know, a good growth, you know, substantial growth over the 16, and that would be deployed by the end of 21.
For 2020, it's not a matter of going and cutting a whole bunch of new deals with universities and municipalities, but just fulfilling the opportunities that are already there. Is that correct?
Yeah, if we did nothing but deploy our existing permitted contracts, that's considered a $30 million U.S. revenue business. If all of our contracts were fulfilled and operate for a year, that's essentially the contract value that we just bought with the transaction with Gotcha. We'll have growth on top of that. We're in discussions with many new municipal and university partners to add throughout this year. But if we didn't add another contract, if we didn't have another partner, and we merely deployed them, we have a very good book of it.
Thank you so much for your time. I've learned a lot, and we really look forward to following this story.
Well, thanks, Guy. Really appreciate your interest and time as well. Thanks so much.
Have a good weekend.
Great. Thanks, you too.
That concludes another episode of Equity Gurus, A Closer Look. See you next time.
Thanks for listening. For disclosure statements and more info, please visit www.equity.guru.